Central Virginia. Are you ready to rumble? Fasten your safety belt and hold on tight. The community watchdog is in the house. This is The Schilling Show with your host, former city councilor Rob Schilling, on News Radio 1070 and 98.9 FM, WINA.
Rob Schilling is a freedom fighter. He's a brave man.
Hour number two of The Schilling Show, and the phone lines are totally, absolutely full. Coming up in this hour of the program, Johan Gauss will be with us, Walking in Faith, a missionary work in Africa. Stephen Strang at the bottom of the hour, the book is God and Donald Trump, about the evangelical support of Donald Trump for president and beyond. And Adam Cochran will be with us, Safe Kids, and the topic is online bullying. Before we go to the phones here, and I'll get to your calls in just a second, it's getting crazier and crazier. And you know, because I've said this many times, but I just want to put emphasis on this, that you cannot control the mob. So when somebody like the Moat Monster attempts, that would be Kristen Zekos, to all those who don't know who I'm talking about, when Modi attempts to cozy up to the mob, thinking that it will get her political power and she can guide and direct the mob always turns. The mob always turns. And so it was brought to my attention that on Don Gather's Facebook page today, there is a discussion here in which the mob is turning on Kristen Zekos because of what happened last night at the meeting, her going after Mary Carey, as she should have if she wanted to maintain order. In fact, she should have enforced the rules instead of just saying she was going to enforce them. But what happens now? Well, they're turning on Kristen Zekos, saying that she has forced the police chief out. And by, there's a guy named Evan who's calling Kristen Zekos a white supremacist. You need to leave with Kessler. You wanted to force a black woman out. I mean, this is what's going on now. And now they're talking about reporting Kristen Zekos to Facebook to get her off of Facebook because she's a white supremacist. This is what's happening. This is the mob eating itself. We gave you the warning, Moat Monster. The same thing will happen eventually to Wes Bellamy. It happened to Dave Norris. Just because you're black doesn't mean you're immune from the syndrome of the mob turning on its leader. It will happen. All right, let's go to the phones here. We've got a full rack of callers. And very first, I'd like to go to, let's see here. Let's go to Jim. Pat and David, hold the line. Jim, welcome to The Schilling Show. Uh-oh, I'm guessing I might have, is this Jim?
Hello.
Yeah, Jim, go right ahead.
Rob, Jim Camblos, how are you?
Jim, it's great to hear from you, our former Commonwealth's attorney. And I know you have a great perspective on things that are going on in the community right now.
Well, one comment and one statement about the chief.
Yes.
My wife and I were shopping yesterday or the day before, and we used Meadow Creek Parkway, and it just sort of came to me that, you know, they restricted it down to one lane coming in.
Mm-hmm.
It's a traffic jam in the middle of the day on a Monday. They really don't want people downtown, so I don't think the parking meter thing is my comment. The parking meter thing doesn't seem to be such a big deal because they're restricting people's ability to get downtown anyway.
It's a great insight, and you're right. When we were having those discussions for the Meadow Creek Parkway, and I will say I was this deciding vote on getting that in, but one of the conditions from Caravati and some of the others down there were it will never, ever be more than one lane in each direction, and we're
right.
going to build the bridges so that it will restrict that, and that will be in force as long as the road exists.
Right. Yeah, ever, never, anyway. But my real reason for calling was the chief.
Yes.
A year ago or so, my wife and I were walking down the mall on a nice noontime type day.
Mm-hmm.
And the chief was walking down the mall with Gary Pleasance and somebody that I didn't know. And I said, I think that's the chief. So I went up to Gary and I said, Gary, and he introduced me to the chief and told the chief, this is Jim Camblos, he used to be Commonwealth's attorney. And it was just, "Hi, Chief, how are you? Welcome to Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. How do you like it?" And his response to me, that my wife and I both heard, and I'm sure Gary did, Gary was right there, "Well, so far it's okay. But if it doesn't really work out or I don't like it, I'll just go somewhere else."
Well, that's interesting, and that was about a year ago.
Yes.
Well,
and he said it to me when I asked him, "How do you like it?" And he said, that's what he said. And I was sort of flabbergasted. I don't know that we said much after, "It's nice to see you, have a good day," or something. But that's what he said to somebody that he didn't know. And he said it right in front of Gary Pleasant.
It's fascinating, and I'm so glad you brought this up, because I really noted, I think it's disingenuous, this statement on the way out the door, that nothing in his career has brought him more pride than serving as the chief of Charlottesville. I just can't believe that, no matter what experience he had outside of August 12th, and based on what you're saying, it wasn't even that good a year ago.
Wasn't. Well, that statement he made today might have been chief speak.
Well, I think it was.
You know, there's athlete speak when they interview athletes before or after a game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's athlete speak. That might have been out of the chief speak book, what he said.
I have a feeling you're exactly right. That's a good way to put it.
Anyway, but I tell you what, watching Walker on TV last night, it was like, OMG, what are we in for now?
Yeah, I think it's going to start up big time on the first meeting of January, and they're going to have an organizational meeting, and they're going to have to decide who gets to be mayor. And you can tell there's going to be two votes for Wes Bellamy, and there's going to maybe be two votes for Kathy Galvin, and then there's going to be one vote that will be the deciding factor. And boy, I wouldn't want to be that person, really any of them making those votes.
Well, you're doing a great job, Rob, and we appreciate, my wife, we turn you on religiously.
Well, I appreciate that very much. It's great to hear from you. We sure miss you here in your service to this community, but I know you've got other things to do, and you're probably glad, as I am, that I'm no longer in the position of responsibility in the city of Charlottesville. It's become untenable, and Albemarle County is heading in the same direction.
Right. Well, there are two down now, Brown and Thomas.
Yeah.
And there are four to go. And the four to go would be Jones, Galvin, Bellamy, and Cigna.
And we shouldn't forget that the communications director, Miriam Dickler, was at the leading edge of all this, resigning her position maybe about a month and a half ago. So I'm with you. We'll hold our breath, and maybe they'll all jump ship by tomorrow morning. Hey, Merry Christmas to you and Chris. I appreciate it, Jim.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, thank you so much. All right, let's go back to the phones and say hello to Pat. Pat, welcome to the Shilling Show.
Well, thank you, Rob, for taking my call. I just wanted to thank the lady, the petition carrier.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great strategy, and she is absolutely correct, and I can surely feel alignment with her, because I'm also a petition carrier, and we have a staff of carriers for Rise Charlottesville, the group who is working hard and will continue into the next year for recalling the Charlottesville Five, the current city councilors. But I just wanted to mention that I do feel for the business people.
Yeah, I do too.
I had the need to go downtown, and I walked about 4 days ago, because I can walk more quickly than I can find a parking space.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to say, I looked around, and it was just a strange environment. It was filthy. There were cigarette butts lining the mall and adjacent to the parks. There was erosion, both parks, Jackson and Lee Park, and
yes.
Then there was erosion on the bank of the public library.
Mm-hmm.
There was erosion and a lack of grass and seating in Lee Park. I feel for the folks with the visual blight who live near the older antique homes or overlooking the trash bags with the statues. The secondhand smoke was just very, very, very offensive. On every block of the downtown mall, there were people standing around in a rude manner blowing their smoke so that you you would cough. And I watched the city council meeting last night. It was outrageously laughable.
It was terrible, wasn't it?
It was, and I have to say, I detected Miss Carey's frustration.
Mm-hmm.
And she, I agree. I would like to see more civility within the meeting. But I will say, she has successfully and skillfully manipulated the inept council.
She has.
I honestly like the lady.
Yeah, I do too.
She's pleasant with me. Mm-hmm. And I signed her petition, actually. But I want to say that she has some real skills there. Seacoast and
mm-hmm.
and Signer just have lost all control. Mr. Signer looks very, very uncomfortable and unhappy. And Ms. Galvin also just sits there and does nothing to speak up.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've got to go to the break because I have a guest here in the studio with me, and we've got to get to the next segment. But to be continued, I should have reserved the entire 2 hours for phone calls today because there's so much to say about what took place last night. But, Pat, I'm with you. The address online is riseseville.com, riseseville.com. You can sign the petition to get rid of the Charlottesville Five. It couldn't come a moment too soon. Pat, thank you so much. Got to go to the break. Coming back on the other side, we'll be talking about missionary work in Africa. Johann Gauss will be with us. Stay tuned. The Shilling Show continues here. It's a Tuesday edition of the program. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll be talking with Stephen Strang. The new book is God and Donald Trump. How is God working in America in the recent election? Right now, we welcome to The Shilling Show Johann Gauss, walking in faith missionary work in Africa and around the world. And boy, there's a lot going on here in this country, but many of the stories and the things that are happening in other places, we don't hear about at all. Johann, welcome to The Shilling Show, and thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob.
All right. Tell us a little bit about your work in Africa, because a lot of people just don't have a sense of what it's like to be on the ground there.
Yeah. I am basically an African. I grew up in Africa. I was born in Africa. So for 40, just in excess of 40 years, I've been in the mission field. After starting out my life thinking that I would be an electrical engineer, and mm-hmm. had 10 years of that before God gave the calling, through a man by the name of Brother Andrew, also known as God's Smuggler. Mm. And I had the privilege of working with Brother Andrew for a number of years, going into those countries where people were being killed for their faith, where it cost a price to be a Christian. And at that point, the calling came to step into full-time ministry in 1981. So together with my part-time ministry, I'm just in excess of 40 years in the ministry. Our biggest problem in many parts of Africa is the fact that there are no trained leaders in the rural areas, in the bush. For 40 years now, I've been working at developing training leaders, pastors, in the bush where there is no way that they can go to a Bible school. You know, people think, yeah, but why don't they just go to a Bible school? Well, there are a couple of problems. One, they don't have the finances to go to a Bible school. Secondly, the capacity of the Bible schools are overwhelmed. They're full.
Mm. Kind of a good problem in a way. I mean, I'm glad to hear there's a lot of people in the schools.
Yeah. The problem is they all come from the cities.
Okay.
Nobody goes out back and go and live off the grid in a mud hut. And for 40 years now, that has been the place where God has called me and the organization that I started in South Africa, or headquartered out of South Africa, but only working into six different countries north of South Africa, and taking into consideration that the educational level is low. So there are many problems, but we have been able to multiply. Our calling came from 2 Timothy 2, verse 2, where we were called to go and find the, like Paul writes to Timothy, find faithful men, teach them so that they can teach others. Therefore, we only work with indigenous people. I don't go and preach to them. Mm-hmm. I work with the indigenous people. And we build the indigenous local leaders up to the point where they are capable, able, and ready to take their own congregation to a level where their knowledge and their obedience to Christ grows to the point where you really have fellowship there. The big thing is, number one, these leaders speak the local language.
Yes.
Number two, they understand the cultural pitfalls, so they don't have to go through a cultural program. Mm. And three, they are accepted by the local community as a spiritual leader. So if you're investing in a local leader and making them effective and efficient in bringing the gospel, then you can start being ready or effective from day one. Whatever he gets today, he's proclaiming them to them tomorrow because he doesn't have anything else.
We're talking with Johan Gauss, Walking in Faith, his work in Africa and in other places as well, but developing indigenous leaders. I think a lot of American Christians, the church in America is really, I will just say they're tuned out from the reality and the threats to Christians in places like Africa. Africa is a big place, but I would imagine there are some very dangerous parts of that country for Christians. What is that like?
Yeah, there are very dangerous areas. For many, many years, we had systems of government that outlawed Christianity. Just like you had in the Far East and so on, you had in the Middle East, you have situations where Christians are just not accepted.
Mm-hmm.
They go to church in peril of their own lives. And for somebody to go and work with them would be, you're putting yourself on the line. And for 17 years, I worked exactly in those types of situations. And now for the rest of that time, going up to just over 40 years, it's been in a more open situation. There are tremendous, tremendous opportunities. The people receive you with open arms. If you're coming to bring God's word to them and to share with them the Bible, let's just take one single example. The Bible societies themselves estimate that some 200 million Christians, not people, Christians, do not have access to a Bible. 200 million in the rural areas of Africa. And for that reason, now for 40 years, I've been doing this, and God has blessed us tremendously. Our biggest problem now is to stay ahead of being able to supply the Bibles, to be able to get the people who can do the training, because there's such an enormous demand.
The demand is a wonderful thing, and it is the Great Commission. It's what people need to be doing. It's getting the word out and bringing the good news to people who have no access to it. We've got just about 2 minutes left, so I want to understand how people might be able to help you and what they can do to be involved in this ministry.
Yeah. We have a website up. It's hbmin.org, hbmin.org, where a lot more is spelled out of our strategy and the curriculum and so on. But for people in the U.S., number one, of course, there's you can pray for us. We send out a prayer letter that whomever sends in can get hold of it. Secondly, you can give because we have sponsorships for some of the training situations. Widows and orphans are amongst the most vulnerable. There is a program called the Dignity Project that deals with widows and orphans. You can sponsor Bibles. You can invite us to a group that you're in where we will talk about Bibles and show you how $12 can change the lives of 20 people. Every Bible that is bought and placed in their hands touches the lives of about 20 people. And then, of course, you can come. You can come. I lead small groups of people overseas. Once a year I go over, but there are other of my staff that take people over because we want you to see it. Here's the key. If we come to your church and we speak to you, we get your involvement in the sense of a donation. You come over and see, and you get involved on the ground. I've got you for the rest of your life.
I can well imagine. Would you give us the website, Johan, one more time if people want to go and take a look?
It's hbmformary.org. And the telephone number you can reach me on is 434-825-7661.
God is doing amazing things through this ministry, and I'm so glad that you came to share with us today, and just wishing you God's blessings in the year ahead, Johan.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Let's go to the break. We come back on the other side. The Shilling Show continues. We've got much more ahead, including Stephen Strang, and the new book is God and Donald Trump, and it was pretty amazing to watch through the course of this election what took place, and the president, who really, I think, had an arm's-length relationship with God, allowing people to just pray for him. It was pretty remarkable. We saw the pictures. We talked with Pastor Jeffress and others about that. So we will get into that in greater depth on the other side when the Shilling Show continues. Don't forget, you can send me an email. It's robs@wina.com. We'd love to hear from you. I know that not everybody is able to participate by phone. So email is great to let me know what you think about what we're talking about. Stay with The Shilling Show. We'll be back after news and weather. So we've seen some pretty remarkable things going on with the election of Donald Trump. There was so much prayer surrounding. I remember getting notifications through social media that people were holding prayer events for the election in advance. And of course, we had interesting conversations with Pastor Jeffress and others who were very close to then candidate Donald Trump. There's a new book that talks about all of this, God and Donald Trump. Stephen E. Strang is our guest today. He's the CEO of Charisma Media and the author of this new book. Steve, welcome to The Shilling Show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
You know, a lot of people just looked at this as something that happened. It was kind of interesting, but really, this was a miraculous thing that took place in the election of 2016, because most people said that's totally impossible. It could never happen that Donald Trump would be elected.
You're 100% correct. And most journalists and most books on Trump don't even get close to this. But as Christians, don't we believe that God is sovereign and he's behind everything?
Indeed.
And, you know, Hillary Clinton wrote a book called What Happened? And people have been asking what happened. Well, I can tell them. That is, to go along with what you just said, God intervened because people were praying. You know, the country has been headed in a wrong direction for a long, long time, but it seems to have accelerated in the last decade. And with Hillary Clinton, there are many of us who were just afraid that it would just almost be beyond the point of no return. So we prayed that the Lord would raise somebody up. It's like one Christian leader told me that I quoted in the book God and Donald Trump. He said, we were praying for someone. We didn't have anyone in mind. And the person I believe that the Lord raised up, imperfect as he is, and listen, my book does not make him look like a saint, because mm-hmm. he's not. But he has changed. He's become a champion of Christian causes. I believe he's sincere. And he's a whole lot more likable and humble than his public persona. I know that because I was able to interview him in 2016.
You know, it's interesting because I had the same experience. I had a one-on-one interview with him right after he announced his candidacy. He was here in Charlottesville and was gracious enough to give me time at one of his properties to sit with him and interview him. And it's really remarkable, the kind of bravado that he puts forward, but the personal graciousness that he extends when you're speaking to him one-on-one.
And I try to bring that out in the book. You know, there are a lot of people that have had that experience. Of course, we deal with a lot of different issues, but I try to put some things on the record that other people aren't putting on the record. I felt like I was writing history in a way. And I try not to be too emphatic in God and Donald Trump, but I try to tell a story in a way that the reader can come to the same conclusions, and that is that God has a reason for raising up imperfect leaders. You know, we can think of King Cyrus, King Nebuchadnezzar. Mm-hmm. He used both of them very clearly for his plans and purposes. But then even some of the people that are our favorites in the Bible, like King David and the Apostle Paul, were very, very flawed people. So for me, I was a Ted Cruz guy until he dropped out of the race.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of responded to Trump like everybody else did, you know, like, you know, he's not my guy. But then I discovered that he had really changed and that he had a chance to win. I actually believed that he would win. In fact, we wrote articles in Charisma Magazine from several prophets who prophesied that he would win against all odds. And I even flew up to New York and was at the Hilton Hotel the night of the election when, you know, it was decided, you know, when the count came in. It was just a wonderful night, and I write about that in God and Donald Trump. And I'll tell you, you mentioned Pastor Jeffress. He was there. It was very, very crowded, and you could only talk to the people you're standing near, and he and I were standing close to each other, and of course, we were there for hours waiting on the election results to come in. And we talked about some of these kinds of things, and I even, this is a little more humorous, but I took a selfie with him and his wife just so I could send it to my wife, who was back home in Florida, and I ended up putting it in the book as just a souvenir, kind of almost to prove that I was really there at that party.
Yeah.
And Pastor Jeffress said, James Robinson said, other people said, this was an absolute answer to prayer. It was an absolute miracle. And I know there are a lot of people that don't accept that. There are people that think we're kooky to even, you know, suggest it. But really, if you get right down to it, these same hypothetical people that I'm referring to don't believe in a lot of other things that we believe, like the infallibility of the Bible and being loyal to just one wife and one husband, you know, throughout your entire life. I mean, these kind of values are out the window, but yet they're godly principles, and I believe that the pendulum has swung a little bit in the right direction with the election of Donald Trump.
We're talking with Stephen Strang. The new book is God and Donald Trump. It's a fascinating expose of what was going on behind the scenes during the election, so much of the prayer. You know, I had a very interesting conversation with Pastor Jeffress on this program, and he told me something that I want to share with you and get your response to it, because we were talking about some people doubting the sincerity of Donald Trump, and he said, you know, Donald Trump has asked me privately on numerous occasions, not in front of the cameras, not in front of any other people, to just call him aside and pray for him. And I thought, you know, that is a remarkable statement, because a lot of people might do something when everyone's watching. But if you ask a pastor, hey, would you please pray for me? That is a very private and a very personal relationship that's being developed, not only between the pastor and the person, but between the person and God.
And he seems to like being prayed for.
Yes,
in fact,
he does.
Lots of cases during the campaign and since, when Christian leaders will get together, They'll gather around him, they'll lay hands on him, and they'll pray for him one by one. And it seems like somebody takes out their cell phone and records it and puts it on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was able to document some of these prayers because of that. You can go and Google it and find out a lot of stuff. But, you know, there was a picture that went viral. It was on Drudge, and it was of a bunch of Christian leaders with their hands on his back. It was taken from behind
by
one of the participants. And he was roundly condemned or criticized by people who thought that he should not be, you know, hobnobbing with these religious weirdos. But he doesn't seem to care about that. He seems to appreciate the prayer. And I believe that God is doing something in his life. I believe that he's growing in the job and that he's growing in his own way as a believer.
We've got just a couple of minutes left, and before we say goodbye, I want to talk about Israel and Donald Trump, because there's some remarkable things going on, in particular this strong stance of moving the embassy to Jerusalem where it rightfully belongs.
Well, I go into that in the book, too. In fact, there's most of a chapter about Israel, and, you know, he was the first sitting president to go to the Western Wall. Now he's done this with the embassy, which was actually a campaign promise. Mm-hmm. That a number of other presidential candidates said they would do, and nobody followed through on it. But he's a man of action who follows through on his word, and he believes it's important. I think that he, you know, his daughter converted to Judaism, and so he knows a lot more about Judaism than probably most Christians do.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a soft spot in his heart for Israel. The Christian leaders, like the ones we've mentioned, almost 100% are behind Israel, and I think they have influenced him too. And, you know, the Bible says that God blesses those who bless Israel, and I believe that the United States will be blessed as a result of this action taken by our president.
Yeah, very, very much looking forward to those blessings, and I know we will see them. Stephen Strang, if people want to get a copy of your book, God and Donald Trump, it's a great read. Where can they do that?
Nearly anywhere books are sold. I was in Sam's last night, and it was for sale there. In fact, I bought a copy. They can go to GodAndDonaldTrumpBook.com. That's our website. Download some free chapters. Find out how they can buy it. But it's at Barnes & Noble. It's at Mardell's. It's at all kinds of Christian bookstores. And, of course, it's available online as well.
I'm so glad you documented the story because people need to read about this. People of faith and people who are not sure about their faith, there's a wonderful story within. Stephen E. Strang is the author of God and Donald Trump. Thank you for being with us today on The Shilling Show.
Thank you for the privilege. Let's do it again.
We will, and there's much more to talk about. All right, let's go to the break. Our final segment of today, the time has flown by on this, a short week as we lead up to Christmas. Yeah, we are leading up to Christmas, just a few days away. Coming up in just a few moments, Adam Cofferman will be joining us from Safe Kids, the problem of online bullying. Stay with us. Hey, a final brief segment of The Shilling Show for today, a Tuesday edition. Adam Cofferman joins us. President of Safe Kids, the topic today is online bullying and a really disturbing story that was in the news cycle over the past couple of days. Adam, welcome to The Shilling Show. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Would you tell us a little bit, first of all, about Safe Kids, your organization?
Absolutely. Safe Kids has been designed by educators, law enforcement, psychologists to help combat the issues of violence that we're seeing in the world today.
Well, we've got a lot of that all around us and really, unfortunately, right here in this community and many others across America. Tell us the story of Keaton Jones. A lot of people may not recognize the name, but what happened to him was extremely disturbing.
Right. So Keaton Jones has some developmental issues that have appeared physically, so he looks a little bit different than the other kids. And his story goes that he's been bullied the majority of his school career because of the way he looks. Mm-hmm. And it finally came to a head last week when he had gotten in the car after school and his mom videotaped his kind of very emotional plea to stop bullying.
And so all of this came out, and there was initially a lot of sympathy for him, and then they found out some things about his mother that people didn't like, and boy, it got vicious, didn't it?
It sure did. You know, initially, a lot of celebrities and movie stars and professional athletes came out in support of Keaton and in support of anti-bullying. And then all of a sudden, the internet did a little research on the family and found postings from several years ago with his mom and other family members. And the bullying quickly turned around to not only him, but his family as well.
So what lessons can we learn from this? I mean, obviously, that it's no way to blame the child for something the mother said, no matter how recent or a long time ago it was. But did people take away the right message, or is this bullying being reinforced?
You know, that's a great question. You know, I try to put myself in Keaton's shoes, you know, a kid who has been bullied the majority of his life because of the way he looks. And then all of a sudden, in a 15 minutes of fame, he gets a ton of support. And just as quickly as it came, it then left. And now he's getting bullied again by the people online and the people against his family. So I think for a brief moment, it shed some light on bullying. But now the very people that came out in support now all of a sudden seem to be the cyber bulliers themselves.
Yeah, it's really remarkable to see all this. So if we look at this situation, what is it that parents should be looking for to make sure their kids are not subject to this? Because a lot of kids will never tell their parents when these sorts of things are going on online.
Correct. So one of the things that we look for is some dramatic change in behavior. Self-esteem issues, potentially becoming almost recluse or spending an abnormal amount of time online. A lot of the bullying comes from social media, and in today's society, in today's generation, Kids live and die by social media. Their self-esteem tends to be drawn directly from their social media accounts. So if there's negative pictures, negative publicity, not only is it for the world to see, but it's just like what we're seeing with Keaton's family. It's there for a long, long time on the internet.
That's a lesson that parents need to teach their kids because, you know, young people will be reckless sometimes. It's the nature of maturing and growing up. But how do we instill in these kids the danger of a long life of a bad photograph or a bad comment or something like that that they just inadvertently put up?
It really becomes a matter of, first off, I think education, you know, having the kids understand that while this might be a great photo and might get a lot of likes, if you're within a couple years of graduating high school or college and you're going to be looking for jobs, employers are going to be looking at that. And so we tend to tell parents to use, you know, the employer rule or what I call like the grandparents rule. Mm-hmm. You know, if your grandmother or your grandfather saw that picture, would they be proud of you? And if you can't wholeheartedly say yes, then an employer is not going to be proud of that picture either.
A lot of kids these days have phones and tablets and other sorts of devices. Is there software available that allows parents to monitor the activity on a remote device like that?
There is. There's some emerging technology actually out of Southern California that originally was developed for child predators and pedophiles. But in short, what it does is that it monitors the text and the images that are going in and out of your kid's phone in the background. So much like what may be called a keylogger or some other type software that hackers use to gain access to people's devices, the same technology is becoming available now for parents to put on their kids' cell phones to see what are they texting out, what's coming in, and what are the images that are being sent.
That's encouraging news. Adam Cofran, if people want to be in touch with you, learn more about the topics that you cover at Safe Kids and your other work, where can they do that?
Our website is Safe Kids Incorporated. That's all spelled out, .com. And all of our social media is at Safe Kids Inc., I-N-C.
It's a very important work you're doing. Adam, thanks for joining us today on The Shilling Show.
Great. Thank you so much.
And that's going to wrap up today's edition of The Shilling Show. My goodness, where did the time go? You know, I spent my weekend, I want to thank my buddy Mike, who really put a lot of work in, rebuilding a deck at my house. It was a small deck, but it was a lot of work. And so I'm kind of tired. I was grateful to have an extra day there at the end of the week to just kind of catch up from being tired from all that work, but it was great. Everything came out well. I love getting my hands on things. And what a gift it is to have friends who pitch in and help when you got something to do. There's a song called You Find Out Who Your Friends Are. It's in our bumper rotation, hasn't come up for a while, but you really do, and it's a wonderful thing to have friends. When we come back here tomorrow to do it all over again, well, I'll tell you what. We're going to be talking with author Jonathan Gilliam, how to stay safe in this chaotic world we live in, and really probably great advice for people who are just walking down the downtown mall or visiting Charlottesville Silly Clownsville. Immigration update from Michael Cutler and new policies of the Trump administration, particularly regarding chain migration and the lottery. Dumb ideas that time has come and gone a long time ago. And Lisa Province, all the latest from Seaville. And we'll be talking about the resignations, the mass resignations out of City Hall. We're waiting for Bellamy and Signer and the rest of that crew. Fenwick, you can still resign. We'd love to see it. We'll see you soon on The Shilling Show.